This is part two of our conversation with Lin-Manuel Miranda. If you haven't listened to part one, you might want to go back and give it a listen or not. However you're doing it, it's a party. Enjoy the show. The SparkVile podcast may contain profanity and other adult content. Please use your discretion.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I jump in my SparkVile. Could be something that I want to make or how I want to be. I pump it in my SparkVile. I jump into my SparkVile. Let's open up the SparkVile.
Lin, I'm so curious because so many people must tell you like that you inspire them and your work inspires them. What or who inspires you, and how do you refill your well?
Hulk
since
comics.
You're responsible for filling all these other wells.
I really am reading the Immortal Hulk, right? And it's really making me very happy.
fill your
I love it, the Hulk.
And but I think that it varies. It varies widely. I really get inspired by working with other people. I could never have been a novelist. I love working in the theater, and I love working in film because it's always a bunch of art forms smashed together.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's get to bring the thing you're good at into
bucket,
the room.
Big bucket. Yeah.
And so it's really interesting. Like my favorite part of collaborating is when I've got a new song and we're all going to hear the new song and then we're all going to make the new song better. Like that's my favorite part.
Oh,
like,
right before you play the song, do you want to shit yourself?
No, I just can't wait.
Good
I can't wait
you.
To like get in it and be
God
like,
bless you.
I made myself laugh or I made myself feel something with this. Like, what do we think? Is this really an audience of one or will this work on more people?
Yeah.
Because that's, again, you know, we right back to the first question of like writer, performer. That's the only way I know how to write is putting myself, whether it's through research or just thinking about it a lot, like putting myself in the skin of the character and talking to myself until it feels true. Or if it's a 2-person song or a 5-person song, putting myself in the perspective of all those people and like talking to myself. And when it feels honest and it rhymes pretty good, I write it down. And it's that simple and it's that complicated. And I have to make myself laugh before I make you laugh.
Yeah.
You know, no one cried harder at the orphanage than I did when I was writing The Orphanage. I cried so you could cry.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the morning of writing that because, of course, it was the morning of the workshop. And I didn't have an ending. Deadlines.
Dude, that's rich.
And I was like, so a part of me is like, Pippa Sue's going to have to learn all of this like in an hour.
She's got that good brain.
She does have that good brain. Yes. It's, you know, her, Mandy Gonzalez, they're just people, Karen, they're people who just like, you know, you can throw them the ball and they'll just dunk it.
Yeah.
But it was also, I had this list of the things Eliza accomplished after he died. And I would literally write each line like, I interview hundreds of soldiers. Like, and just break down like every line. Like that scene in Something Has Got to Give is the best scene about writing I think I've seen in a movie where she's just crying, and then typing furiously.
We were just talking with Bart Freundlich and Julianne Moore about
I call
it typing and crying.
Yes.
If it goes back to this, like if something gives you a powerful visceral response in your body, I think that sometimes people mistakenly think that it's going to be like putting a hand on a hot burner and it's like, oh, don't touch that again. It hurts. It's like, no, it's just emotion. It's just visceral feelings moving through you. And it is a cue to you as an artist that there's something so fucking good there.
It's juicy.
There's a vein of gold there.
Yeah. So I remember Vanessa because, you know, it's pretty different from legal work. And she would come over and be like, Do you want some water or something? No!
And she knows this is how it works.
The dog is like,
this is the process.
Calling, running the orphanage. You know.
Is she accustomed to that now when she sees you crying? Is she like,
I think one of the things that sort of made me realize.
She slides a box of tissues across the table. It's like.
One of the things that made me realize she was a keeper was I never felt embarrassed writing in front of her. Like really early on, like I would bring my like cheapy Casio to her apartment in Brooklyn, and she'd be, you know, studying skin cells, and because she was a scientist when we started dating, and I would be in the other corner being like, in Washington Heights, and she just wasn't phased. She's incredibly unfazable.
She is. Awesome. She is unfazable. She's unflappable, that woman.
Yeah.
It seems like she'd be super good mom, because it seems like one of your boys could come in with a compound fracture and she'd be like, put a cold washcloth on that. Like, she seems like this. She'd be chill about a lot of shit.
Well, she does her, I mean, the other thing is that she does her research. So it's like, if we have anything that's coming up, like, you know, like our little ones, like he's got breathing stuff. Like we think he's probably going to be asthmatic. I had asthma as a kid. Yeah. And so like, it's just like colds get complicated fast with him. So like now she knows everything about it.
Mm, wow.
Like she just, that's what she'll, she's, you know, she's brain. Like hits Consumer Reports before we buy the fridge. Do you know what I mean? Like that's who she
she's
is.
She's got a good brain.
Ooh. I'm like, that fridge is pretty.
Smart. I'm feeling this one. This one feels right.
She's got a tremendous amount of capacity, that wife of yours. Yeah. And she's like, has a family and a career, and she still has the capacity to make sure that the fridge is the best fridge.
That's not to shortchange how empathetic she is, because we watched a cut of the Heights movie and I was going to do like a little tally of how many times she teared up. Like I was like, oh, this will be cute. Like, and like she cried so that it started to feel cruel after like the third. I was like, I'm going to stop counting.
put away your golf pencil.
Because it's also so much of the story of our neighborhood that she grew up in too.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you'll see when you see the movie, they're singing When You're Home in J. Hood Wright Park. And like her grandmother's building that she grew up in is in the shot.
Oh,
you know what I mean? So it's just like,
man,
it was a lot of, and then there's us and our relationship and how song came out of it. And so, you know, she's a feeling person. I know I always describe her as a robot, but like, it's also, she has such honest and uncritical responses to work. It's like, I think that's my secret weapon as a writer, is that I have someone who's just like, yeah, I was singing that King George thing you wrote like all week, so that's probably good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I've heard you say that you recounted a tale where you brought us, I forget which one of the songs it was. It was one of the songs for the women.
It was Helpless.
You brought
Helpless. A song called This One's Mine.
And she was like, meh. Like made the face.
She was like, that's fine.
She gave you the old
she said, and she phrased it as beautifully as anyone who doesn't like something can phrase something. She said, I mean, it's good because you're good at writing, but I don't feel like it's your last draft.
You're like, babe, I need your voice to be higher and more enthusiastic.
She was like, everything you write is good. Like, you're a good writer, but like, I don't think this is the last version of it.
Babe,
I've been killing myself. And then like an hour later, like I was like, I got it.
I love it.
I wasn't done yet.
What a good partnership. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So we were talking to our pal, Celia Keenan-Bolger, as she was,
your pal and mine.
I know, the love of all of our lives.
The dream child.
The beast child. So she was preparing to wrap up her run in To Kill a Mockingbird, and she was trying to figure out how to follow up this thing that
she's
has been
this. She's almost done, huh, November?
She's done. I think she's done.
I think it's this weekend.
I think by the time this comes out, she's done.
At this point, she is done.
So she was trying to figure out how to follow up this thing that had been this big creative life event. And Hamilton was such a tremendous, it was a cultural event for everyone. And we imagine it was a big life event for you as well. What advice would you give to Celia and anyone who's facing that liminal space after the conclusion of a big creative chapter, whether it's publishing and promoting that book or wrapping that film or closing a Broadway show or completing the run of your high school musical? Like, how do you deal with that conclusion and that liminal space?
Can I start with High School Musical and move on from there?
Yeah.
Because I remember very vividly what I used to do after every High School Musical.
Cry and cry.
We had the tradition where you'd put up a poster on the wall, on the back wall behind the auditorium. We'd all put up our posters with our names on them, and you sign each other's posters and you write messages. Yeah. And I would, you know, our shows were always matinee show Thursday, two on Saturday, like matinee and evening show, and then like one evening show on Saturday. And I would spend Sunday in bed reading my messages, like in bed. Like I couldn't leave the bed. I'd be so sad it was over.
Yeah.
And I would just like read my messages from the girls I had a crush on, from the actors who it looked up to so much when they were seniors or about to graduate. And I think some version of that still works, like is still appropriate.
So a little downtime, a little grieving, a little reflection.
Yeah. And a little like look at what we did. Like and sit in it. It's okay to sit in it. You should be really proud of it.
Yeah.
And then also like have a plan for a week from then. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Have an idea about what maybe that next chapter or next thing could be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know I did it after Hamilton, Puerto Rico most recently, because that also came on the tail end of 3 months of Mary Poppins press, leading right into Hamilton, Puerto Rico.
3 months?
I mean, kind of.
That's so much. Because
it was global, right?
Yeah, it was global. Everywhere. So you go to London, you go to Paris, and you know, it's a whole thing. And then also we moved into a new apartment, so which my wife really takes the lion's share of the work on. So I left for a press tour, came back to a different
home.
And then we lived in it for about 5 days, and then we went to Puerto Rico for a month. Oh. So,
wow.
My wife and I left the kids with my parents. We went to an undisclosed location where there was nothing for like about 5 days. And literally the first breakfast, we talked for like five. I was like, oh, hi, how are you? A lot has happened.
Yeah.
Hello, my wife, who I love. Yes. It's good to see you.
But that goes back to that taking time to process these big like life events.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it was like this like massive reset of like, a ton just happened, and we never had time to really kind of sit in it and process it and talk about what the next year wants to look like. Yeah. What, you know,
there are articles written about how busy you are, and I can only imagine like seeing that and being like, I don't have time to read
about how busy I am.
Thanks, just like a spooky skeleton.
Thanks
electrified.
For reminding me.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Man,
Lynn, we're obsessed with this idea of, you know, creative failure or perceived failure, because there's a theme that runs through these conversations of people who are like vividly describe a moment where something happened or someone said something that literally shut them down, sometimes for years, just being completely shut down. Have you ever had an experience of a failure or perceived failure that you struggled with in any way?
The closest thing I can, because I have to say, I've never really felt creatively blocked. I always chalk it up to, well, the approach isn't right, or my thinking about it isn't right, and I've just got to come at it and sneak attack it from a new angle. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been pretty healthy about that.
That's great.
What
you're describing is really good. Just that little...
Because then it's not personal.
You said that thing one time about a good piece of feedback feels like a puzzle piece clicking into place, like if things aren't going right.
So it should feel right instead of feel contrary.
And what you're saying about it's not necessarily I'm using quotey fingers, like a failure. It just means let's enter through a different door. Let's take a different tack. Yeah.
Yeah. But I want to talk about two things, because the closest thing I had to that was one, a producer who will remain nameless, but a producer who produced some real shit, like real good stuff, said to me in kind of a musing way, I was taking a meeting with this producer, and he was like, I feel like you're maybe not a music and lyrics guy. You might just be I think you're a book and lyrics guy.
What year was this?
This was 2003.
Okay, great.
And because this producer had the track record that they had, I took it to heart. And I thought, well, it is ego to think I'm going to write book, music, and lyrics for In the Heights. And I didn't. You know, I didn't necessarily need to do all three of those jobs. So maybe I'm not a composer. Like maybe this guy is right. Maybe I'm not a composer. And it was, I would say a few months of not writing anything and actually going as far as to get names of other like musicians to collaborate with. And I got,
this is, I'm feeling feelings.
And it got as far as me literally picking up the phone, and it was like the name of a guitarist that someone had recommended for me. And I was about to call this person, and I went, I'm not fucking doing that. But it did lead to the point of like, but I don't feel that way about the book to this musical. Mm-hmm. I'd love to work with a playwright on this musical. So the push helped in a weird way, because it made me realize what I cared about and what I didn't care about. And I said, if I don't know how this fucking neighborhood sounds, nobody knows how this fucking neighborhood sounds. Like, if one thing I know, yeah. it's the musical landscape of this. And I'm happy to work with the playwright to make it better. And then we started the search in earnest. And then we found Kiara.
Yeah.
But it took someone misdiagnosing me.
Yeah.
In an off-the-cuff way. And yeah. me giving really outside-sized power to those words.
Those casual comments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Misdiagnosis. That's a classic. Like that's it was a like a misdiagnosis.
Like straight up, I was like, no, yeah. you're right. I shouldn't write all three of these things, but you're wrong about which ones.
Yes.
Yes. Is this a person that you still see?
It is a person I still see.
Are you just gracious?
I'm just gracious.
Yeah, I imagine you would be.
Wait,
yeah.
you said two things. Then what was the other thing? Do you remember?
Well, the other thing is about failure and about the, you know, you get... Sooner or later, you're going to get to the realization that the things you're passionate about are really the only things worth pursuing.
Mm.
You'll get led astray by like gigs that pay well or yeah. gigs that sound really good to a previous version of you. But here's, yes. but here's the thing. I'm going to name names on this one because I don't think anyone minds.
This is not a blind item.
This is not a blind item. When we were working on In the Heights with Jeffrey Seller and Kevin McCullum, our big brother show was High Fidelity, the musical.
Mm.
And it was a friend of mine, Tom Kitt. I didn't know him that well yet, but I knew he was an incredibly talented songwriter. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be the hit show. Like in everyone's, it was never said, but it was sort of implied like, well, we're producing High Fidelity. And once that is a hit, we'll be able to take a risk on your no stars, no composer, no director show. Because we've got directed by Walter Bobby, who directed Chicago. We've got
a
really loved like property, High Fidelity, a movie and a book people love. And we'll do this. And, I love Tom and I loved everyone involved and it closed after eight performances. And it was suddenly like our big brother dropped out of college and we're like, are we still taking a risk? Are we still doing the thing?
Yeah.
And Heights had been my passion since I was 19 years old. And with Kiara, when she came on board, it really went from like an 80-minute one act to a two act show we were really proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And it was our passion project. Tom Kitt's version of In the Heights was a show called Feeling Electric that he started writing in college with Brian Yorkey.
Yeah.
And when that show went on, and again, not a proven novelist, not, you know, none of the things that made High Fidelity, quote unquote, a surefire hit.
Mm.
He wins the Pulitzer Prize.
Yes.
For Next to Normal. Yeah. But I guarantee you the experience of High Fidelity, he learned so much for that. So it happens in the way it needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure even there's a part of Tom, and I don't want to speak for Tom because you should have him on the show. He's an incredible writer.
Absolutely.
I'll get High Fidelity on, then I can put my passion project on.
Yeah.
And that's not always how it works.
Look how that worked out.
The passion project is what wins.
Yes.
Like every time. And so I think about that a lot because it scared the hell out of us just as the baby brother show with less sparkly everything.
Yeah.
That's right. If that fails, what are
that
we
fails,
destined
where are
for?
We? Exactly. But it won. Nobody knows anything. Two, you cannot control how the world will react to your work. You mm-hmm. just cannot give up. All you can control is the work you are making, and then you throw it out into the pond and you see the size of the ripples. You see how many times it skips.
You cannot give up. Yes. You can't give up.
Yeah.
Yes.
So good. Lynn, I'm so excited to ask you this question. Our friend Meta Wagner is a creativity author and a speaker, and she developed these five creative archetypes. And we want to know which one of these types best captures your drive to create.
Okay.
And I wouldn't bet on this. Like after this whole introvert extrovert thing,
I know nothing.
I don't know you. Okay. There's five of them. Here we go. Number one, you live to make an audience laugh or cry and you love applause and adoration. Number two, you're all about art for art's sake. You become so immersed in your creative work, you lose all track of time and space. Number three, you thrive on breaking boundaries and crashing conventions. Number four, you need to express yourself and you hope your art will help others. And number five, you have a fiery desire to right wrongs and change the world with your art. Did one of those jump out at you?
four of them did.
Mm. I know. That's why I'm so confused by you.
I am too, because I...
Which was the one that didn't?
Social justice, because I think that I can tell when someone is writing something, but they don't really feel passionate about it. It just feels like homework. And it, when you are fueled by social justice and you have those chops, there's nothing more powerful.
Yeah.
You think
yeah.
of The Normal Heart. Yeah. I think of Angels in America. I think of yeah. so many incredible works of art that were fueled by righteous outrage or need to right wrong or need to make the world see. That is such an incredible fuel source. I think inspiration can come from anywhere. And I think it's just being honest about what inspires you, because mm-hmm. there are people who see wrongs and go, I'm going to write a play about that. But the intention doesn't match the passion. But all of the other things are true.
I know. That's why I was fascinated to ask you this question, because
the reason fifth one, because the thing is, I find that rage exhausts me. I don't know how to write from that place.
Yeah.
It's I could do a hot 16 at Freestyle of Supreme about how angry I am about a headline, and I'll get a good fuel source, but I'll be exhausted afterwards.
Interesting.
I can't spend 7 years in something that makes me angry.
Yes.
I just can't.
Yeah. Choose wisely, friends.
I don't know how to do that. There are people who can do that, and they've got incredible furnaces where they store it and they make fuel out of it. I don't want to disregard that in my answer. It doesn't work for me. I have to love some aspect of what I'm writing, because it's gotta. They each take a decade.
Yeah. So you're a blend of 1 through 4.
I think so. Yeah.
I feel that about you.
I do.
Interesting.
Lynn, what's it all for?
Shits and giggles. I don't know. I wanted to. I didn't have anything profound.
That's the best.
What's Shits it all for?
What is it?
It's because we'd be doing it anyway, right?
Mm.
I think that.
Is it for love of the game? Is it for?
In a way, it is, because I know that I'd still be writing if I were still a substitute teacher at Hunter College High School.
Word.
Mm-hmm. I just would be writing in between grading jags.
Yeah.
I've been making shit since I was little.
Yeah.
So and I feel very lucky that it's like a calling, and it's always what I've been doing. And I feel lucky beyond belief that I can make a living doing it, but I would be doing it if I couldn't make a living doing it.
Yeah.
Because you don't go into theater expecting to make a living. You just don't.
You're doing great. You're doing great. Finally, what is sparking you these days?
What is sparking me these days?
Uh-huh.
You know what's sparking me these days? The difference between my kids is sparking me these days. Because I've got... my wife and I joke that we each sort of have a mini us, because the older one is very me, and the little one, I mean, just resemblance looks a lot like her, but also...
He must be so cute, because your wife looks like a bunny rabbit.
Yeah.
So he must be a cutie cutie.
Yeah, I'll show you some pictures. But my older son, he's got a long memory. And so if he stumbles on the stairs are like a thing for a minute. If he, he had a rough thing where his head got underwater, and then like swimming was like a whole process because he didn't want to get his hair wet again.
Yeah.
He's very sensitive. and I was very painfully sensitive child. And then my littlest son is the fucking Kool-Aid guy. I mean, he busts through walls. He is sensory seeking is the best way I can describe it. He's like, how hard can I fall? Yes. Give me another. And I just like,
cannonball.
I look at him with wonder how different he can be from his brother, who's like, don't let the plates touch each other. And then there's Frankie, who's like, you're not eating that. Give me that. Rah!
Wow.
And busting through walls. So that is the highlight of my day every day.
I love it.
Sensory seeker. That's a keeper phrase.
That is it. We hope that this put another bunch of sparks in your file. Listen to me. vuvuzela or air horn. If there's a spark that you'd like us to explore, or if you've taken a spark and you've fanned it into a creative flame and you'd like to share that, email us at thesparkfile@gmail.com or submit it through our website. That's right, our website, thesparkfile.com.
We'll even take your feedback, but you know the price of admission. First, you got to share a creative risk that you have taken recently.
And be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe to it, review it, 5-star rate it. If you like this podcast, oh God, share it with people you love. If you didn't like it, I can't with you.
If something tickles your fancy and gets your creative juices flowing, we are writing you a forever permission slip to make that thing that's been knocking at your door. It's your turn to take a spark and fan it into a frickin' flame.
You gotta plot it. You gotta not throw away your shot it. You gotta dot, 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 dot. You gotta fully George Surratt it.
You gotta take it
and make it.
Lynn.
Yeah.
Lynn, we love you so much. Thank you.
I love you guys.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark files. Could be something that I wanna make or how I wanna be. I pump it in my spark files. I jump into my spark files. Let's open up the spark file.